Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Democrat Kathleen Strand, Republican Ryan McLaughlin, and Edward Klein, author of Ted Kennedy, The Dream That Never Died. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the beautiful studios of XM Satellite Radio, Sirius Radio on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. And if you'd like to email us a comment, our address is btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com, the audio and video version of our broadcast. In case you miss it live every Sunday night, you can watch it for the rest of the week on our website. Also, you can check in midweek to find out who we're having on next week. And wherever you're listening from coast to coast and border to border tonight, it's nice to have you with us. In the first portion of our program, we're going to be talking about Ted Kennedy. As you all know by now, the senior senator from Massachusetts passed away after battling brain cancer this past week. The eulogies, the bipartisan turnout in laying the senator to rest yesterday in Massachusetts and then ultimately at Arlington Cemetery. And so we're going to be talking about Ted Kennedy for a portion of tonight's program, but we're going to do so in the context of his legacy, and we're going to do it in context of health care. It was the issue that was most closely associated with him, and at the moment it is still one of the hotly contested issues in this country. And so we're going to talk about the political impact of Ted Kennedy's death as well as some of the issues. And we'll also be talking about former Vice President Dick Cheney and some of the things that he had to say, you know, on Fox Sunday News today. But first of all, let me begin by asking and welcoming Kathleen Strand, who's our Democrat tonight. Kathleen, nice to have you with us. When you look at back at the history of Ted Kennedy, for those who say he was a masterful politician and health care was his issue, with all those decades that he spent in the seat of power, being described as one of the most successful legislators, why don't we have the health care plan that he wanted?
Well, I think that there's no doubt there's a huge void in the United States Senate with his passing. We had been missing his voice from the debate these past several months, and I think I'm hopeful that as we move forward to the debate, remembering his legacy and the cause of his life will help us to push through some critical needed reform.
Ryan McLaughlin also joins us. He is our Republican tonight. How effective was Ted Kennedy if the thing that he wanted most never happened?
Well, I think that's a good question. It's not based on his character, but I think that the issue with him was that people don't want government-run health care. And I think we're seeing that with the town halls. We're seeing people that are just fed up. So although he was a tremendous advocate for people, and nobody can argue with that, I just think his policies were not in step with what people who work for a living, people who own businesses really want.
Kathleen, what about that? That, again, a great politician, everybody liked him personally. They certainly saw the tragedy in his life, what he suffered. They liked to be in the United States Senate with him, certainly the camaraderie of the United States senators. He was probably one of the most popular members of a very exclusive club. But you take him out of the Senate, and maybe he really wasn't in tune with a lot of America.
I think I'd have to disagree. What this last campaign taught us and we're still seeing with this administration, change is hard. And health care reform doesn't happen overnight. We've seen this before when the Clinton administration tried to get it done in the 90s. I think that Ted Kennedy stood up for the 45 million plus Americans who don't have health care and the millions more who are underinsured. And I think we're at a time now where every day people are losing health care coverage. They are being denied coverage for pre-existing conditions, and people are suffering. And those costs are adding up to the average taxpayer. I mean, at the end of the day, we pay for the uninsured. When they go into the emergency room because they don't have regular care, those bills end up being paid by the taxpayer. And I think that the calls for change are getting louder. I think people are obviously more comfortable with the status quo, but it now is the time for healthcare reform. And I think with Senator Kennedy's unfortunate passing, it's just a stark reminder that we need to get this done.
Let's turn back the clock. We should mention, by the way, that your political pedigree, you've been involved in a lot of campaigns. You were part of the communications team for Hillary Clinton's race for president of the United States. And also, if we turn back the clock, sort of like 18 months ago, you were her communications director in New Hampshire, which was a successful race for her, where she sort of came back. But one of the devastating blows to that campaign was when Ted Kennedy endorsed Barack Obama. So turn back the clock, if you can, 18 months ago. What was going on there, and what was your reaction then?
There's no doubt that Senator Kennedy's endorsement of Senator Obama at the time was a pivotal moment in the campaign. And we felt that on the ground in the states and everywhere. And I think it was a very important decision for Senator Kennedy. I think, obviously, our campaign was disappointed. And as these things go, I know that President Obama and Senator Kennedy had a very close relationship that they had developed when Senator Obama came in the United States Senate.
And what was the relationship between he and Hillary Clinton? Because at least early in the campaign, when Barack Obama was somewhat of an asterisk, it was sort of suggested that the relationship between Hillary Clinton and Ted Kennedy was fairly close.
They worked very well together in the Senate, and they had a good relationship, a relationship that went back many, many years when she was in the White House. And the Clintons and the Kennedys obviously share a lot of similar challenges, being a powerful family in public life. And, you know, I can't speak to Senator Kennedy's decision. I know that there was disappointment, but, you know, at the end of the day, that was the decision he needed to make.
Ryan, do you agree that was the turning point in the campaign?
Yeah, definitely. It was pretty unique to watch it from being a Republican. I mean, it was the pomp and circumstance, but there was a sea change there. Mm. But that's what happens in campaigns. Usually there's a pivotal moment where in a primary somebody breaks through.
And it was not a lukewarm endorsement. It was a ringing endorsement, and it was not a one-day story. I mean, that was the gift that kept giving and giving and giving. Rhetorically, and obviously with the involvement of Kennedy, Mrs. Kennedy as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think it just goes to show how this country does have a love affair with the Kennedys. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm an Irish Catholic. My mother still to this day tells me I remember exactly where I was where JFK died. I mean, my mother has it. I think there's a fondness for the family. And again, I don't agree with a lot of what he believed in, but you can't argue with his advocacy and it is a shame. There's going to be a void, I think, not only in the Senate, but, you know, that family gave so much to this country. So,
well, I, from a political standpoint, I want to know whether with his passing, is the spirit there? And we've heard so much about how popular he was and how many Republicans, at least in the Senate, liked him.
Mm-hmm.
Although when they went back to their districts, they probably didn't say a lot of nice things about him.
No.
That supposedly was the way that they acted. I want to get reaction of whether or not this is one of these issues that they're going to try to win one, you know, for Teddy. And the reality is that going to fly in the face of what you've said, which is the spirit and the tone and the tenor of what we've seen in the town halls, which is, there may not be a lot of profiles and political courage by some of the members of Congress that saw up close and personal the animosity. For health care reform, at least the government alleged takeover of it that is playing out in the politics. Back shortly from Chicago.
I had a great idea at work yesterday. So I gathered my A-team to meet online using WebEx. I passed the ball
to Carol in Atlanta, and I created some killer graphics. Then I pass the ball to
Taz in San Jose because I write the code that makes their ideas work online. Then I pass the ball to
Logan in Cambridge. I'm kind of the keeper of cool. And hey, it was cool.
So now my idea wasn't just an idea. It was our hot new product line created by our national development team.
Spread across 3 time zones.
And we couldn't have done it without passing the ball.
Using WebEx, the only way to pass the ball online.
Pass the ball. Get your ideas rolling. Go to WebEx.com and try WebEx free. Just click the radio graphic and enter promo code BONUS to get a free trial and a free retractable VoIP headset. Remember that code, BONUS. WebEx from Cisco, WEBEX.com. Free headsets available while supplies last. Terms and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. We're talking about Ted Kennedy and the broader issue of how it relates to health care. Tom Bevan from RealClearPolitics.com also joins us, and he keeps his eyes and ears and everything on the pulse of politics in the country. And I want to just take a moment about the wide berth that he had in the body politic, and whether or not the Democrats are going to rally for Ted Kennedy. Because are they not in a position to say, you know what, if they really want all the things that Ted Kennedy talked about for 40-plus years, they've got the votes, don't they?
No, they don't, actually. And one of the problems is, especially as we talk about health care, right, it's the Blue Dog Democrats. I mean, it's inter-party fighting here. And you know, Mike Ross, for example, who's a Democrat from Arkansas, who's been one of the leaders fighting against the plans that have come out of the House – you know, are any of the Blue Dogs going to be moved by Ted Kennedy's death? Does that change any of their constituents' minds or wants? You know, not necessarily. And so I think it's still
going to
be –
Isn't that a test of the Democratic leadership skills to try to get the Democrats all on board with all Democrat votes?
It's been a test from the beginning, and I don't know that they've succeeded. I mean, could they ram something through the House? I mean – perhaps. I don't know that they could. And not to mention that it's going to, you know, it will be – I don't know that Democrats want to go in a direction where they pass, you know, legislation that accounts for 17% of the gross domestic product on a strictly party line vote. I think that's a terribly risky proposition.
What do you think of that, Kathleen?
I think he's right. I think the division between the party has certainly been problematic as we move forward. One thing I've thought about when the start of this process, the president presented his principles, what he'd like to see in the health care plan, and left it in the hands of Congress to write the bill and make it something that would work for them. Whereas with the Clintons back in the day, it was an 1,100-word bill that they handed to Congress to send pass it. So it's sort of with the president, with passing health care, I think it's, you know, you can't seem to come out on top no matter how you do it. It seems to be one of the most difficult
debates. How do you read the tone and tenor of the town halls?
My honest opinion on the town halls is that the protesting and the shouting and interruptions is part of an orchestrated effort to disrupt the debate. That's where I'm going to sit on it.
You laughed and you're smiling. Ryan, what about it?
I couldn't disagree more. What I find so ironic is that it's okay for 6 years for Democrats to protest about the Iraq war, but the minute regular people complain to say, you know what, you've quadrupled the deficit in 9 months, I don't want government-run health care, it's orchestrated by the Republican Party. That is a joke.
I'm not disagreeing with protests. I think everyone has a right to protest. I think it's the manner in which they are disrupting any sort of productive conversation on the issues. So many people I talk to, they're like, I don't even know what's in the bill. Like, no one's talking about what's going on in the bill because the reporters and the media are reporting on the shouts and the interruptions. And to the Republican Party's credit, their tactics, it's working. You know, it has gotten us off the issues of the debate.
For the record, I was laughing at your expression.
Not at me.
Look, I think it's a combination of the two. I think Republicans have organized and Democrats have organized their side as well in this debate. But I do think that, look, there is to Ryan's point a little bit. I mean, this isn't necessarily about health care. I mean, it is to a certain degree, but it's also about what's come before. It's about stimulus. It's about, you know, the government. It's about the deficit. It's about a lot of things.
It's about anger.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's about anger. I mean, and I think one of the things that people are angry about is for those people who voted for Barack Obama, they wanted change. They wanted those troops out of Iraq. They wanted a quick track to health care reform. And frankly, they didn't like bonuses being given, you know, to the people that were running AIG. They're angry.
No,
and the only time they had a chance to talk to their congressman was, you know, 8 months later. They had to wait until August to get at these guys.
And I honestly agree with that. And I think that, you know, Republicans, if you go back to these Tea Parties and where you had Republican senators and congressmen who voted for the stimulus bill being shouted down by, you know, these Tea Party protesters. Rasmussen had a poll out, I think, today or yesterday showing that 57, almost 6 out of 10 people would vote every single member out of Congress, regardless of party. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's sort of where the tone and tenor of the country is right now. It is angry, and it's not a good time to be an incumbent, definitely.
And is go ahead.
I would also say when the election happened, I think we were all swept up in what it was going to mean. Change was going to come, and it was going to come immediately. We've been waiting a long time. I think a lot of people, Democrats, Republicans, were sort of the expectation
was going to happen that. Overnight. Did you really believe that?
No, I mean, I'm saying I knew all along. President Obama knew, Hillary Clinton knew, that change is hard and it takes time. The economic stimulus isn't going to work on day one. It has to be phased in, and rightfully so. Healthcare reform isn't going to happen overnight. The debate has to happen, and it is going to, you know, eventually come through.
Does the anger that exists right now, is the anger, is it intense enough, is it deep enough that it can last through November of next year, Ryan, in your view?
I think so. I saw some numbers recently from a poll that said that right now the numbers in 1994 for Republicans are basically very similar to where they're at now. You know, this economy isn't getting better. You know, you can't spend your way out of a recession. And I think, you know, when you have members of Congress who refuse to hold town forums and town halls and they're ducking their constituents, that's just going to get worse. They're talking about a second stimulus. They're going to have a highway bill next year. You know, the spending is going to keep going.
Let's go to Joseph listening to us on KLBJ in Austin, Texas. You're on the air. Go ahead, Joe.
Bruce, your opening remarks, you made a mistake. You said Ted Kennedy had not been able to, you know, was not successful in passing health care legislation.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Finish your point.
In 1975, he passed the HMO legislation. You know, he was the driving force behind that, and the purpose was to control the cost of, you know, the rising cost of health care. And the idea was to reduce procedures, you know, to try to control the doctors, the number of procedures they could perform in a given time frame and that sort of thing.
So your point is that he did something and it wasn't successful?
No. My point is he passed major legislation. And we know it today as HMOs. He created the HMO.
The point I was making, and maybe I did misspeak, my point was that the broader concept of universal health care, the thing that every, you know, the fact that we have, you know, 50 million uninsured people in America, that was part of the big plan, the big dream of Ted Kennedy. And what I'm saying is that is something that was never accomplished. There was certainly the CHIPS program. There was legislation in the area of mental health, mm-hmm. decriminalization of the mentally challenged. So, I mean, it wasn't that he didn't do anything, but I'm talking about the big, big dream was something that is still elusive.
I don't know that would be the crowning jewel. I mean, I think HMOs and some of these other things are equally significant with covering those, and that number keeps going up. I hear that the real number is around 15 million when you exclude illegal aliens and rich people who are self-insured.
Can I just make a quick point? I mean, this brings up a good point about why it's so hard to pass comprehensive health care. I mean, Truman tried it, failed. Clinton's tried it, failed. Barack Obama is not having any more luck trying to sell. I mean, this is part of the dynamic of Congress. When you try and pass something as big and that touches on so many different people, so many different aspects of the American life, economy, et cetera, you are invariably going to have factions that come in and tear their pieces apart. Mm-hmm. You can pass smaller incremental things like SCHIP, like HMOs, like, you know, you can break things off. But when you try and do something this big, Bush on Social Security, immigration reform, we could have passed pieces of immigration reform, ones that had some bipartisan support. So this is just like it's a lesson that nobody seems to learn when you try and do too much.
But politicians know this. Why does everybody fall for it then?
Well,
they fall for it in campaigns.
They don't learn. I think Obama actually thought that he was different and he would be able to do things that people before him weren't able to do. I think he's found out that it's a lot more difficult than he thought it was going to be. I also think he found out or is finding out that he perhaps didn't have the sort of grounding in the legislative mechanisms of Congress that, you know, even past presidents had. And that's been difficult, I think, for his team to, again, to try and get even his own party all on the same page. Mm-hmm. And these are lessons that are fairly obvious if you look at history.
Let's go to Chris listening to us in Chicago on WLS. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening. Personally, I think this bipartisan commentary is just simply a lot of hot air. The Republicans have absolutely no intention whatsoever of compromising. And now I've heard the recent commentary by Hatch and some of the other Republican senators saying that the vote should get the 80 vote in the Senate. Well, just as a little bit of historical fact, the 1964 Seminole Civil Rights Act was passed with 71 votes. If we were under those rules that the Republicans want now, that law would never have been passed because the racist racist Democratic senators that have turned over and become the racist Republican senators, the Southern senators, have simply changed parties. The Republicans are not going to vote for anything whatsoever about this.
By the way, let me just correct. It's not the same racist senators. It is a new generation of senators who represent some Southern states.
Agreed. But in what was it, 1969, 1970, the Southern Democratic senators moved en masse, you know, Strom Thurmond, Russell from Georgia, you know, et cetera, moved from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party. They didn't change their views.
Okay. Russell never moved to the Republican Party. Strom Thurmond did. Richard Shelby did. Others. But Richard Russell never moved to the Republican Party. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about Ted Kennedy and taking your calls at 1-800-723-8029.
I'm living paycheck to paycheck.
We're so far into debt.
All we do is fight about it.
We don't know what to do anymore.
How would you like to get a call finding out that your Visa bill had been reduced from $8,000 to $4,800? What about discovering you had an extra $500 to $1,200 in your budget per month because of what you are saving on your credit card bills? All of these dreams are possible when you make 1 5-minute call to Jordan McKenna. They will match you to a reputable law firm that can stop harassing collection calls, reduce your monthly payments, and save you literally thousands of dollars off your credit card debt. They work for you, not the credit card company, so you can get the maximum savings possible for your situation. Call for free information now. 800-204-6773. Individual results will vary, so please review all program details and terms. Call 800-204-6773. That's 800-204-6773. 800-204-6773.
From Austin, Texas to Anchorage, Alaska, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway on America's Great Radio Stations and also Sirius XM Satellite Radio. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. Our Democrat tonight is Kathleen Strand. She is the senior vice president of the Dover Group. And once upon a time, she worked for Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. And she was the communications director in New Hampshire, which is where the big comeback took place. Put Hillary Clinton back in the race, and she joins us making her maiden voyage on our broadcast this evening, a native of Chicago and a graduate of the University of Missouri, Columbia Journalism School, and nice to have you with us. Also joining us this evening is Ryan McLaughlin. He is the president of Max Strategy Group, and he's involved in a lot of political campaigns. He's advising Matt Murphy, who is running for the Republican nomination for governor of Illinois, and also has worked for Peter Roskam's campaign, Congressman Roskam of Illinois, who kind of was the darling of the national media a couple of years ago in a hotly contested race. Also joining us this evening is Tom Bevan. He is the executive editor and the founder of RealClearPolitics.com. That is the premier place to go if you're a political junkie looking at what the numbers, looking at what is happening politically around the United States. In the second hour tonight, we're going to be looking into the significant races next year. Obviously, every member of Congress is up for reelection. We've got a lot of Senate races. Actually, there's about 36 of them. 34 of them will be actually on the ballot next week or next year, and we'll talk about that as the program unfolds. And joining us now... to share his thoughts and insight into Ted Kennedy is a gentleman who has written a book called Ted Kennedy, The Dream That Never Died. He is Edward Klein. He's the former foreign editor of Newsweek magazine and also the former editor-in-chief of the New York Times magazine. And Mr. Klein, thanks very much for joining us tonight on Beyond the Beltway.
My pleasure.
We were talking recently about what is likely to be whether or not the current leadership in Washington, whether or not they can rally around the spirit and the memory of Ted Kennedy and get through a bill, a health care reform bill, that Ted Kennedy would actually be proud of. What do you think the likelihood is of that?
Well, it's hard to read his mind in life as well as death, but I must say that I don't think he will. I don't think they're going to be able to get the national option that they were all talking about for so long, and that many of the people on the left of the Democratic Party would like to see. And, I think, however, Ted Kennedy was the kind of guy who fought as hard as he possibly could for his ultimate goal, but settled for what was attainable. And I do think there will be a health care bill. I think it will pass, but I don't think it will have everything that he had worked for the last 45 years. But then again, he always said, you know, you live to fight another day, and his spirit will certainly be alive to give the motivation to fight another day.
You talked about a late in life redemption that Ted Kennedy experienced, and you talked about the kaleidoscope of roles that he played, both as a family leader and also as a political leader. Take us through some of those roles and focus, if you will, on sort of the turning point in his life.
You know, after he lost both of his brothers to assassins, Ted Kennedy was thrust into the role of being the patriarch of the family, the leader of the family, the surrogate father to many, many children, many of his nephews and nieces. He was not prepared for any of those roles. And in fact, after the assassination of Bobby Kennedy, he really, I think, had what you could almost describe as a nervous breakdown. He took off. Well, first of all, he tried to return to the Senate. He drove to the Senate after Bobby's assassination. Could not get out of the car. Could not get out of the car and go into the Senate. Instead, he drove to Hyannisport, got on, rented a boat, because his boat was, for some reason, not available at the time, and took off and sailed for weeks, didn't shave, didn't bathe, hardly ate, came back after a while with a little beard, and visited his father and mother. His father, of course, had a stroke by then. And his father reached out with his shaking, trembling hand and touched the beard, and his mother said to him, "Teddy, if you don't shave off that beard, I'm going to shave it off for you." He finally pulled himself together and did become the paterfamilias of the entire family, and ultimately, as we all know, ran for president against Jimmy Carter, the nomination in 1980, lost that. That was another huge blow. I think it was a turning point politically for him, however, in the sense that he no longer really ever thought seriously again of running for president and concentrated for the rest of his life on being a man of the Senate.
How did he so, I mean, because when the rumors circulated that he was going to challenge Jimmy Carter, there was, you know, the professional Kennedy lovers, many of whom obviously had leadership positions, you know, in the party and certainly in big city machines all over the United States. They thought sort of instantly that this was going to be a cakewalk for him. When did he realize that was a race that was not likely to be winnable?
Well, I would say maybe 2 or 3 days before he announced for the nomination, he sat down, as we all know, this famous interview with Roger Mudd, a fellow who he believed was a friend of the family. He had actually gotten Roger Mudd's son a job. Mudd had spent time with the Kennedys in Hyannisport. So he thought, as you put it, it was going to be a cakewalk, this interview.
Another and friend in the media.
Yeah, friends in the media. You always have to watch out for those people in the media. I say that as a member of the media, of course. And he could not answer Roger Mudd's question, why do you want to be president?
Pretty simple question.
It was all downhill from there.
But when did he realize that he was not going to win it, though? I mean clearly, you know, the political historians and anybody that watched that interview almost from the get-go, as you said, you know, it was a simple question. It was meant to be, I think, a softball that he couldn't handle. But there was a lot of resentment that President Carter, you know, used against him in the months and years that followed, did he not?
Well, you know, Carter said to when he heard that Kennedy was going to run, and I can't use certain words on radio that would be accurate for reflection of what Carter said, but I think I can say Carter said, I'm going to kick his butt. And, in fact, he did in the primaries. Teddy suffered one major loss after another because Carter had the organization. He was disciplined. Kennedy's machinery was strangely not working well at all. So it became clear almost within a matter of weeks that Carter was not going to be toppled. Kennedy, however, it's interesting, the further behind he fell in the delegate count, the better he became as a campaigner. And toward the end, he started winning some primaries, but by then it was too late. He won, for instance, the New York primary.
But also at that particular time, it seemed my recollection, and I think you referenced it in the book, was that that here is a guy who took on the incumbent president of the United States when his own personal life was in a shambles. Relationship with his wife, Joan. She had serious drinking problems, and yet he thought he was going to be able to make it all the way through to the White House, knowing that he had that problem at home every night.
One of the most poignant, in my view, scenes in my book is just before Kennedy made the final decision to challenge Carter. He assembled with Joan Kennedy's psychiatrist's agreement, a panel of psychiatrists and psychologists to discuss whether she could actually stand the pressure of a national campaign. And they decided she could. I think they would have given him any answer he wanted. And it was almost immediately after he lost in the vote for the nomination at the Democratic National Committee, and he and Joan returned to Hyannisport, that she summoned the courage to turn to him and say, I want a divorce.
Well, one of the tragic experiences that I had was during that campaign when he was campaigning for the Illinois primary. He had the endorsement of then-Mayor Jane Byrne, but Joan Kennedy was a guest on a local television program that I produced, The Lee Phillips Show, and I have never in my entire life ever seen a more frightened person to be interviewed. And when the first question was asked, and it was meant to be sort of a, you know, kind of an open, sort of ended, certainly easy question, Joan Kennedy absolutely froze. I mean, we thought that perhaps she was having a stroke. She was so startled and so nervous. It was the longest 15 minutes of television I think I've ever, you know, produced. And again, I saw a tragic side of what was going on in that family. I want to come back and talk about a few other things about what is likely to happen in the future, and also talk about some other aspects of Ted Kennedy's life with our guest, Edward Klein. 1-800-723-8029, from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Announcing the Ally Bank Online Savings Account with a great interest rate of 1.75% APY. If you're waiting for the terms and conditions, forget about it. It really is that straightforward. Nothing confusing, hazy, ambiguous, dubious, or dodgy. No double dealing, double speak, or double meanings. Just an online savings account that offers a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. So call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
These are tough economic times, so I want you to think about something. Gold. At Goldline is the company you can trust for your gold needs. They've been in business since 1960, so call them today. 877-361-COIN. That's 877-361-COIN. They've been audited from a Big Four accounting firm. Their financials are solid, so call them today for a free investor's kit. 877-361-COIN. You get the free DVD and free shipping on your first order at 877-361-COIN. One coin. And remember, goldline.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We're talking with Edward Klein, author of the book, Ted Kennedy, The Dream That Never Died. And in the press material that came with the book, Mr. Klein, it talks about what is likely to happen in the wake of Ted Kennedy's death. And obviously, he has now left us. And you talked about feuds that may be breaking out within the family or positioning within a very political family. And I'm wondering if you might share your thoughts as to what you think might be happening right now.
Well, it appears, and I say appears, and I'd like to underscore that word, that Vicki Reggie Kennedy, has taken herself out of contention for filling the senator's seat. However, unbeknownst to most people, in fact, almost everyone, during his final days, Vicki and her father, a very powerful judge by the name of Judge Edmund Reggie, who were really orchestrating everything in the last several months of the senator's illness, they were reaching out to a lot of political figures in the state of in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to see whether Vicki could line up support to replace Ted. She since said that she doesn't want the job, and I suppose we have to take her at her word, but, you know, one can always hope for a draft. Then there's another contender in the oldest son of Robert Kennedy, and Joseph Kennedy II, often referred to in the family as Joe Jr., He is the oldest of all the cousins and has behaved for years as though he was primus inter pares. And many of the other cousins have, in fact, deferred to him. He was, I think, a six-term congressman.
Congressman. And didn't he ran for governor, but he lost?
No, he never actually ran. He began running for governor, and then he was scarred by a terrible scandal when his wife, Sheila Rauch Kennedy, wrote a book about his demand for an annulment, and his comments about the Catholic Church, which were not very flattering, and his campaign manager, his brother, got involved in a sexual escapade with a teenage babysitter.
Oh.
So he withdrew from the race. Then I would add one more name, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one that no one thought was even a possibility, and it may not be. And that's Edward M. Kennedy Jr., Teddy Jr., who gave, I think, the most emotionally powerful eulogy at his father's funeral the other day. He, of course, as we all know, has lost a leg to cancer. He's very well liked. He's very people refer to him as a sensitive soul,
right.
Guy who wears his heart on his sleeve.
And there's also there's a move afoot in Massachusetts to change the succession plan to there may be an interim senator which would serve until a special election is held, so some are suggesting that it would give any potential replacement an opportunity to sort of get their political ducks in a row.
Well, what I've heard is that that will, if that happens, that'll go to Paul Kirk,
right?
A longtime Kennedy. What shall we call
friend of former head of the DNC for many years as well. One other aspect in talking about Ted Kennedy, and again, there have been discussions of it, you know, in the wake of Ted Kennedy's life. And I understand that on a recent interview, you shared a story about Ted Kennedy once asking about jokes about Chappaquiddick. Can you elaborate
on
that?
Well, you know, this, yes. This occurred after he lost his driver's license. And he had to be driven home every day by a fellow named Wayne Owens, who was an aide on his whip staff. He was the Senate whip at the time. And I interviewed Wayne Owens, and he said, and his old Irish dark sense of humor, referring to Kennedy, was wonderful. He loved stories on Chappaquiddick. You know, if I would hear a good Chappaquiddick joke, he would always want to hear it. He would say, what? Got any new jokes on it or any new lines? So it's not something that I concocted. It's something that one of his staffers said, and I reported it.
You you also obviously you deal with the Mary Jo Kopechne incident in 1969. What transpired between the parents of Mary Jo Kopechne and Ted Kennedy during the conversations they had in Ted Kennedy's home?
Well, not so long after Chappaquiddick, several months later, he called Mary Jo Kopechne's parents and asked them to visit him at his home in then Virginia, and they did. He gave them something to drink. I'm not sure they had lunch or not, and he began chatting about this, that, and the other thing, and finally started to approach the subject of Chappaquiddick and could not bring himself to tell them what had happened. And they went home without knowing. And this happened yet again. He did the same thing twice. He couldn't bring himself to confront the truth in the presence of Mary Jo's family.
On that note, we have to say farewell to our guest, Edward Klein, author of the book Ted Kennedy, The Dream That Never Died. He deals with the good, the bad, the not-so-good aspects of the late senator from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Ted Kennedy, The Dream That Never Died. Edward Klein, thank you very much for being with us. Our guests in studio will continue in hour number two. For those listening to us on radio, we'll be back. We're going to be talking about all the major races in campaign 2010. And if you're watching us on television, we'll see you soon.
I'm living paycheck to paycheck.
We're so far into debt.
All we do is fight about it.
We don't know what to do anymore.
How would you like to get a call finding out that your Visa bill had been reduced from $8,000 to $4,800? What about discovering you had an extra $500 to $1,200 in your budget per month because of what you are saving on your credit card bills? All of these dreams are possible when you make one five-minute call to Jordan McKenna. They will match you to a reputable law firm that can stop harassing collection calls, reduce your monthly payments, and save you literally thousands of dollars off your credit card debt. They work for you, not the credit card company, so you can get the maximum savings possible for your situation. Call for free information now. 800-204-6773. Individual results will vary, so please review all program details and terms. Call 800-204-6773. That's 800-204-6773. 800-204-6773.
Introducing Ally Bank's 9-month no-penalty CD with a great interest rate of 1.85% APY. Just to make that perfectly clear, that's a no-penalty CD. No penalty for early withdrawal, medium or late withdrawal, no extra fees, forfeiture, and no fine print anywhere. Just a high-interest 9-month no-penalty Penalty CD that lets you move your money anytime, anywhere. It doesn't get any more straightforward than that. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
With Welcome Rewards from Hotels.com, you get a free night after accumulating 10 nights with any of their partner hotels.
Surely my boutique hotel is not included in that.
Yes, it is, lady.
My band, Sned Leplin, stays in chain hotels just off the freeway. Those included?
With Hotels.com, you bet, Mr. Brojangles.
What about a bed and breakfast?
Faux shizzle.
Hotels on the moon?
No.
Accumulate 10 nights, even at different hotels, and earn a free night. Welcome Rewards from Hotels.com. Smart. So smart. Some restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now. 1-800-507-4221 for your in-home 60-day risk-free trial. That's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Okay, with us today is that stack of money with the giant googly eyes. The money you could be saving with Geico. Tell me, it's really easy to get you. You just go to geico.com, right? Let's try two blinks for yes and one for no. Wait, did you just blink twice or once? Because I blinked and I missed it. I keep blinking.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Democrat Kathleen Strand, Republican Ryan McLaughlin, and Tom Bevan of RealClearPolitics.com. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the SiriusXM studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's toll-free, 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. And for the next hour, we're going to be talking about campaign 2010. Yes, the campaign has already begun in many parts of the United States insofar as filing for various seats. As we all know, all 435 members of the House of Representatives, they will be up for re-election. We've been hearing about the tone at some of the town hall meetings. And as Tom Bevan said in our first hour, he suggested that maybe there's a mood afoot to throw all the rascals out. We want to talk about, it's a long way between now and November of 2010, but I want to talk about some of the issues that are going to be moving people. But right now I want to focus on the United States Senate. And as we look at the scoreboard for next year, there are 36 United States Senate seats up in 2010. That includes 18 Democrats and 18 Republicans. 11 of those are likely Democratic winners. 11 of those are likely Republican winners. We'll debate that in this hour. There are 12 hotly contested races, plus there is Delaware and Massachusetts. Of course, Massachusetts will soon have a new senator named by Governor Patrick in the Commonwealth to fill in Ted Kennedy's seat, and then there will likely be a special election, which in all likelihood will keep that seat in the Democratic column. The other state we should mention, by the way, is Delaware. And in Delaware, there is a placeholder, Senator Kaufman, former chief of staff to Vice President Joe Biden, has been filling that seat since Joe Biden's ascendancy to the vice presidency. And it is suspected that it is going to be Joe Biden's son, the attorney general of Delaware, that is likely to enter the Democratic primary and will likely move into that seat full time. Before we get to the specifics and we start debating the likely Democratic and Republican winners and the toss-ups, everybody will probably have a different list of their own. I want to pick up on something that we sort of left our first hour discussion with, and that is this sense of privilege that many politicians have about an office once it's vacated. And our guest in the first hour was talking that there's been some discussions with Ted Kennedy's widow that she might step in. And, Tom, I know you've got some pretty strong feelings about this.
No, I was just saying I think that, you know, there are plenty of folks out there that, you know, would be offended by talk of the fact that, you know, the Senate seat is treated as if it's Kennedy property. And I think given the mood in the country right now, it's may not be doing Democrats and the Democratic Party any favors. We talked about the placeholder in Delaware. Charlie Crist just appointed his former chief of staff and huge fundraiser down to fill Mel Martinez's seat in Florida. A very safe pick on his part because he knows the guy's not going to challenge him. But was it a smart pick? I don't know. It's one of those things, given the mood of the country right now, I just don't know that. We have a lot of these folks who have been appointed. Steve Chapman actually had a great piece in the Chicago Tribune not too long ago talking about how many people now, I mean, especially in the Senate, I think five or something out of 100 are not elected. They're sitting in Congress making laws, sitting in the Senate, haven't been elected by the people. That's probably not entirely how the founders wanted it.
Ryan, what's your reaction to whether there's a designated Kennedy seat?
Yeah, I agree with Tom completely. There seems to be a privilege, and you see it. You saw it in New York, and you saw it a little bit here in Illinois. The Chris Kennedy saga for the umpteenth time in the last 10 years in this state. But I think what you're seeing is that maybe the country's moved on. I don't think it's that they don't want to be in public service. They probably looked at the numbers and said, maybe this isn't going to work for me. But I do think that it's becoming more and more prominent that politicians are appointing their family, appointing a spouse, appointing, you know, somebody in Illinois, you know, sons and brothers get appointed all the time. It's a little overboard.
Appointed or elected, because we look at what happened in Illinois frequently. I mean, the voters make the ultimate decision, and frequently voters tend to sometimes like putting a family-friendly name in the Senate or the governorship or in any office. I mean, Illinois is just
Roland Burse is elected.
Well, no, but I'm talking about from top to bottom. We have, you know, we have the son of a mayor who's our mayor. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the attorney general is the daughter of the Democratic Party chair and the Speaker of the House. I mean, you have the former assessor's son who wants to be governor. I mean, this happens all the time, the family connection in Illinois.
No, I think it's right. And you see it in all parts of the country. I'm all for, as a campaign worker, actually having an election and voters getting to have their say. I think a lot of times voters will go with what's comfortable. They feel as though, you know, things are okay. My pocketbook feels good. I'm just going to keep going with what I know. But I agree with both the other guests that the sense of entitlement and, you know, we saw it with the Kennedys. You've seen it in other places that we have moved on a little bit. And I think voters are more involved and informed than they have ever been in history. Mm-hmm. And so they're being heard more and more active, and that's a good thing.
I want to go to my list. I mean, I'm going to start with the Democrat members of the United States Senate that most would agree are probably likely to sail to reelection. And we're going to go through that list, and anybody that wants to challenge it, either listening to us on the air at 1-800-723-8289 or certainly around the table, let's go through that list. Let's start with the Democrats. Evan Bayh in Indiana, Barbara Boxer in California, Byron Dorgan in North Dakota, Russ Feingold in Wisconsin, Daniel Inouye, who's got to be about 180 in Hawaii, Patrick Leahy in Vermont, Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas, Barbara Mikulski in Maryland, Patty Murray in Washington, Charles Schumer in New York, and Ron Wyden in Oregon. And, Tom Bevin, you want to knock somebody off this list?
Well, I think the one name that jumped out at me from that list who is looking a bit shakier than the others is Barbara Boxer in California.
And tell us who is likely to knock her off, in your view.
Well, one of the names that's been floated, she formed an exploratory committee, is Carly Fiorina, former chief executive of Hewlett-Packard.
As a Republican.
As a Republican, exactly. And she's very formidable. I think she has the profile that fits California. She can raise a lot of money. She has pretty good name ID. She was very active in the McCain campaign for president. And, you know, Meg Whitman's going to run at the top of the ticket, California for governor. And, you know, I just think that there's a – Barbara Boxer's been a bit shaky of late. Dan Walters from the Sacramento Bee, his columnist out there, wrote a column not too long ago and saying that she was more vulnerable than she's ever been. So I think that's one name to keep an eye on.
I want
to
hear from everybody in the state of California whether you agree with that assessment about Barbara Boxer. 1-800-723-8029. We'll hear from our other guests, and then we're going to go through our other lists. 1-800-723-8029. Take America's political pulse from coast to coast and border to border tonight in this hour, looking ahead to campaign 2010.
Individual results may vary. Program not available in all states. See contract for complete terms.
If your credit card debt is out of control, if you're in over your head dealing with monthly payments, there is powerful information you need to know about the government's bailout of credit card companies. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe with monthly payments you can afford. Credit card companies have been given billions and need to clean their books once and for all. And that's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt with payment plans customized for you. It's yours free by calling 1-800-400-5439. Don't declare bankruptcy. Give us 10 minutes and learn how we have saved our clients millions. Live better, debt-free. For free information on how to settle your credit card debt in a government bailout era, call 1-800-400-5439. That's 1-800-400-5439. 1-800-400-5439.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Ryan McLaughlin, our Republican, you wanted to make a comment on the list of Democratic winners and how some of these races might be affected, the governors that are also up in those states.
Yeah, I agree with Tom that the Boxer is a race to watch. I think she's possibly a stronger candidate than Meg Whitman, who's running for governor. But I think that's a race to watch. And if the trends continue, it's a candidate like Boxer who's been there for a long time. People are frustrated. They don't, you know, their wife got laid off or they had to take a pay cut and they want a change. And it's those type of folks who've been there for a long time who I think are susceptible. So that's Kathleen, one I would definitely watch.
Kathleen, anybody on this list that you agree with or disagree?
I think that everyone on the list, to me, at the end of the day, is going to be safe. I think I take Tom's point with Barbara, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure if Fiorina is that strong of a candidate. She's been around for a long time on the campaign trail. She's made some mistakes. She's got some baggage. And considering California's been under Republican leadership for a long time now, and we know that the voters there aren't very happy with Governor Schwarzenegger, I think that tide will actually lean to end up being in our favor come 2010. But a lot of these races, all of them, is really going to come down to some variables, environmental factors, the strength of the candidates who are running, and how we see the economy play out into the fall before we really know who's
susceptible. They tend to like celebrities. I mean, is Fiorina, is she in a celebrity mode because of her celebrity status in the business world?
I don't know if she reaches celebrity by the definition that Arnold Schwarzenegger or Ronald Reagan did.
Right. Okay. Let us talk about Republicans. Let us talk about the 11 Republican senators that are likely to be reelected. In Utah, Robert Bennett, Sam Brownback in Kansas, Tom Coburn in Oklahoma, Mike Crapo in Idaho, Jim DeMint in South Carolina, Chuck Grassley, he too is about 180, in Iowa, Johnny Isaacson in Georgia, John McCain in Arizona. It's hard. I don't think anyone is going to. I mean, I can't imagine him ever leaving the spotlight, even though there are many Republicans that would like him to do so. Lisa Murkowski, Richard Shelby in Alabama, and John Thune in South Dakota. Any? Let me turn to our Republican. Is there anybody on that list that you think shouldn't be on that list?
No, I think that's a safe list.
And you want to add say something about John Thune?
Well, I do want to say
South
Brownback,
Dakota.
Brownback's actually retiring. He's running for governor of Kansas. So, but John Thune is a guy
who will replace him.
Who's running there? I can't think of his name right now.
Okay.
He's
but he's going to run for governor because Kathleen Sebelius has gone to the Obama administration, and her replacement has said he's not running.
That's right. He's been encouraged to run by the Democratic Party. They think he's actually he's done a pretty good job since Sebelius has left. He's pretty well liked, and they want him to run, but I don't think he's going to. But John Thune is a guy that I said off air earlier that who I think is perhaps a dark horse for 2012. He's not being mentioned among, he's not being polled right now. But if he wins re-election strongly, as he should, I think, given sort of his profile and being from the Midwest right next door to Iowa, he could have a solid chance. I mean, he's going to have to battle it out with Mitt Romney and some of the other folks, because I think he'd have to win Iowa to sort of launch his campaign.
Right. But
it's a possibility.
Right. Also, he is the one that beat Tom Daschle, so he's already somewhat of a giant killer. Let us now talk about the contested races, 12 hotly contested races, and again, there may be some disagreement on this as well. But in that on that list, we have as follows: we have Chris Dodd from Connecticut, Arlen Specter from Pennsylvania, Richard Burr of North Carolina, Harry Reid, the majority leader from Nevada, David Vitter of Louisiana, Mel Martinez, who has stepped down, but that Florida seat in Florida, Michael Bennett from Colorado, and then there are open seats in Illinois where Roland Burris is not running again, open seat in Missouri where Kit Bond, the Republican, is not running, George Voinovich, the Republican senator from Ohio, not running, Jim Bunning, not running, in Kentucky. A lot of Republicans are happy that Bunning's not running. And Senator Gregg in New Hampshire, very popular, but he has decided to step aside. And then, as we mentioned earlier, in Delaware, the Biden seat likely to be taken by his son, or he will at least run, filling there's a placeholder, Mr. Kaufman. And then, of course, there is the seat in Massachusetts, who will replace Ted Kennedy, and that will be decided by, at least on an interim basis, by Deval Patrick, and then there will be a special election, but likely to be a Democratic seat. On this list, is there anyone that you think should be thrown off this list? Tom Bevin.
I think Arlen Specter is going to lose in his primary.
I agree.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the primary.
Well, I think most recently seeing the healthcare conversation and how that's impacted Arlen has really exposed some of the vulnerabilities. And I think even with the president's endorsement and support, he's got a strong challenger in Sestak. And he's
the congressman from the 7th
district.
Here's
the thing. Obama promised to support and campaign for him. I'll be surprised if he does. I'll be surprised if the president's going to go to Pennsylvania, which is going to be a critical state in 2012, and run in favor, go out and promote Arlen Specter over the opposition of the base of the Democratic Party. I mean, I just don't see that happening. At best, he's going to be silent, I think, or he'll give him some, a little bit of help behind the scenes, but he's not going to be out in front publicly supporting Specter. I'd be surprised if he does.
And the winner of that primary will take on Pat Toomey, who is the former, right. who narrowly lost a primary to Specter in a Republican primary, but is a former congressman.
Mm-hmm. Former director of the Club for Growth.
And I think at the end of the day, it remains in Democratic hands. The seat goes to a Democrat.
I don't disagree with that, but I think Specter, I think he's done.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Anybody else? Ryan, you looking at this list? Anybody that you would take off this list or you think is on it improperly?
I think that the Harry Reid seat's interesting. I think that's the reason you're never going to see a healthcare vote in the Senate is because it's probably going to be his undoing. And I think that's going to be an interesting seat. He knows if he takes that vote, he may not be coming back to the Senate.
And there are some polls that suggest that he's losing in Nevada as we speak.
He got some good news recently because Dean Heller decided he wasn't going to run. But there was a poll right after that showing that the chairwoman of the Republican Party in Nevada, I can't remember her name, was I think polling equally even or ahead of him slightly, which is shocking given that she's like not very well known and. Wasn't considered to be one of the sort of formidable challengers.
And also the son of Danny Tarkanian, the son of the former basketball coach, is also thinking of entering the Republican primary there. We talked about Mel Martinez. Mel Martinez is stepping down. Charlie Crist, again, there's a placeholder there. But Charlie Crist, a very popular governor of Florida has said that he wants to run for the Senate.
Yes, but he he is not extremely well liked by the Republican base in Florida. He is much more to the center. He was in favor of he was in favor of the stimulus money and all sorts of things that had the
Republicans. He hosted Obama. He had Obama.
He hosted Obama. And Marco Rubio, who is a sort of young up-and-comer, very conservative, has gotten a lot of, you know, a lot of publicity and I think is well-liked by the base. But it seems like my sense of that race is that he probably won't have enough juice to sort of overcome the you know, the battle that's in front of him. He won't have enough. I don't think he did very good raising money recently, and Chris, you know, his name recognition is just off the charts.
But Chris would also maybe perhaps bring some Democrats into a contested Republican primary.
Well, I think the thinking is that Chris is the better statewide candidate. General election candidate, right?
Kathleen,
I'm excited about Florida for a couple of reasons. I think it could be a real opportunity for Democrats, especially with the freeing up of the governor's race. You think about 2010. Being an opportunity to take the governor's office, but 2012, if we play our cards right, presidential politics, obviously Florida's a big deal. So I'm excited to see us mobilize there.
Who are the likely candidates in Florida? Who could knock Chris off? What you're saying is
I'm
that
talking
as
about
Chris
the
goes
governor's,
to the Senate,
if he goes to the Senate, vacating of the governor's
office. You will have a weaker candidate for governor than if Chris ran for re-election.
Right. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
One thing that's interesting, Ryan mentioned this off air a little while ago, but you do see this when you look at some of these different Florida's a good example. Ohio is another one where the Democratic candidate there, Alex Sink, was way ahead of Bill McCollum, who's a Republican candidate. But recent polling has shown that McCollum is now leading, and that's all on the backs of independents. They've moved away from Democrats. And not only have they moved away from Obama in terms of his job approval and at the national level, but in Ohio, Ted Strickland, running for re-election Democrat, had high approval ratings, is now even trailing. He was like 14, 15 points ahead of John Kasich, who's a Republican who's going to run there. And that race has tightened to within the margin of error purely on the fact that independents have moved away from him. And so you are seeing that dynamic in different parts of the country, which, you know, again, there's a lot of race to be run. It'll depend on what the economy looks like next year around election time, a lot of other factors. But
with Kasich running for governor, the former congressman from the Cincinnati area, Senator Voinovich, also former governor, he has announced that he is retiring. Who is likely to take that challenge on? And could there be a massive could the Ohio voters elect a Republican governor and a Republican senator in the wake of this strong anti-Taft feeling that lasted for a long time?
I think Democrats are actually, not just in Ohio, but again, in other places around the country. I think 6 months ago when Obama came into office, I mean, there was this talk of this permanent, you know, progressive majority and all these things, and they were going to roll, and the landscape looked, if you looked it down the list of races, they felt really good about where they stood in a lot of different places. And I think that it's really shifted quite dramatically in the last 6 months. And now Democrats are playing defense. Republicans are actually expanding their target list as they look around different places in the country. So
I want to talk more about that. And also when we come back, we're going to talk about Wisconsin. Russ Feingold is going to re-election. Back shortly.
Can you hear that? Can you hear it?
It's very annoying.
I hear it.
Can you hear that sound? That ringing. That hissing.
I can't get to sleep with it.
I can't concentrate. I hear it constantly.
You can't hide from it.
Everywhere I go, it doesn't go away. It drives me nuts.
It's tinnitus.
A constant ringing in your ear caused by loud machines.
Loud music.
Ah, finally. Quietus.
I love Quietus. Quietus will stop the ringing fast.
Quietus is all-natural, chewable, quiet relief.
Quiet relief so I can work.
I now get a full night's rest. Quietus has helped thousands of people with tinnitus.
Quietus is real, my friend.
Quietus has changed my life.
Call right now for your risk-free trial of Quietus at 1-800-413-3739. That's 1-800-413-3739. Stop the ringing now. 1-800-413-3739. That's 1-800-413-3739.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. Kathleen Strand is here. She is the Senior Vice President of Communications at the Dover Group, and they handle Democratic campaigns. And she's also working for the Democratic Senatorial Congressional Committee, which campaign is responsible for campaign committee, which is responsible for electing as many Democrats as possible. We give that to you because she's also analyzing some of these races, but we know where she stands. She's also involved in races in Michigan and South Carolina and Pennsylvania and Kansas. Either she is personally or her firm is. It's one of the leading firms. And they also, do you do non-political things as well?
We do. We do some nonprofit.
Tell us what you do.
Early childhood education initiatives in Kansas. We work with a cable association in Pennsylvania. We have a smattering of clients.
And your political pedigree includes you worked for Minority Leader Richard Gebhardt in his presidential run, Senator John Kerry's race, and you ran Hillary Clinton's press operations in New Hampshire, where she won. Also joining us this evening is Ryan McLaughlin. He is president of Max Strategies and advisor to primarily all Republicans. Do you only work with Republicans?
On political campaigns, yes, but we do public affairs on both sides of the aisle.
Both sides of the aisle. And also you're doing some advisory work to Matt Murphy, who's an Illinois state senator who wants to be the governor and is running in the Republican primary for governor. And Tom Bevan also joins us. He is the executive editor and the founder of RealClearPolitics.com. We have callers on the line. Let's go to Steve in La Crosse, Wisconsin, listening to us on WIZM. Nice to hear from La Crosse tonight.
Good evening. Pleasure to talk to you. I wanted to talk about Wisconsin a little bit.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned Russ Feingold for re-election. He's a quintessential maverick. Wisconsin loves their mavericks. But every race he's been in, he's been outraised by his opponents. The Republicans really target him. Mm-hmm. And he's so insistent on, you know, being clean and no PAC money and McCain-Feingold and all that. So I assume that they're going to be spending a lot of money to defeat him. I think with the new polling about where people think about the health care debate, et cetera. We have a lot of controversy in Wisconsin about Obama's initiatives and spending. He might be on that list of, you know, people who could be vulnerable. And plus the wide-open race for governor now that Jim Doyle has announced he's not running for re-election after two terms. We have an incumbent congressman, Ron Kind, here from La Crosse, expressed interest. Scott Walker, the county executive from Milwaukee, and maybe even Paul Ryan might throw his hat in. He's a very up-and-coming congressman for either governor or senator. I'd like your panel to comment on Wisconsin.
All right, let's do that. And also one other name that's been mentioned is that the mayor of Milwaukee, Tom Barrett, who got some national publicity recently when he was came to the aid of a woman who was being beaten up and got clunked himself a few times, but somewhat of a hero politically. Go ahead.
I'd like to speak about Paul Ryan for a second. I mean, he is considered an up-and-comer in the House. He's part of the leadership team there. But, I mean, you know, I think it's very unlikely, even if there's a Republican wave next year, I guess it's within the realm of possibility now. It wasn't, let's say, 3 months ago that Republicans could take back the House. But, you know, for him, I think it would be a good move for him, actually, to jump into a governorship. I mean, that's the way you move up the ladder. So I think that's interesting. I bet you he's thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be interesting. I think he is a rising star, and he's great on the issues, and I think he really connects with people. That's going to be an interesting race. I mean, Doyle is one of those embattled governors. I think his numbers were around 33%, you know, worse than the numbers in Illinois, and he had to step down. And that goes with this trend. I mean, the trend to kind of make a change is going around the country, and you're seeing that in a lot of these polls. That why these races are closer is that not only the generic ballot between Democrats and Republicans are shrinking, but independents are moving, and a lot of these races are going to be very competitive.
There's also, by the way, there's 37 governorships, actually 39. There's two in territory, U.S. territories, and of those 39 races next year, 20 of them are Democrats and 19 of them are Republicans. And again, that involves, you know, a number of very large states. And obviously, whoever is elected governor in 2010 becomes very important in 2012.
Certainly.
Why? It's obvious, but why?
Yeah, because, you know, when you're thinking of the lay of the land and how these critical battleground states are going to be organized and who's going to rally behind certain candidates, you always, or I should say I do, I don't speak for everyone at the table, think about the ball going down the field and what it's going to look like when that race starts to heat up again in 2012, especially for Republicans, I think, obviously, this time around.
Let's spend some time talking about what's happening in Illinois, where this program originates from. Roland Burris was appointed by the disgraced Governor Rod Blagojevich, who's hopefully on his way to federal prison soon. But Roland Burris was forced to announce that he was not seeking re-election. Let's talk about the Republican and the Democratic fields. Let's start with you, Kathleen.
Sure. I mean, I have been working most recently on the U.S. Senate race. Right on the Republican side, I think there are now eight or nine candidates, with Congressman Mark Kirk sort of leading the pack. And there are two or three potential candidates on the Democratic side. I think I feel as though, you know, Mark Kirk is just for the front running is the front runner, I would say, in the Republican Party. Kind of an unknown entity. People don't necessarily feel very good that the Republican Party is rallying around him, since every day it seems like there are more and more candidates getting into the fold. He voted in lockstep with George Bush on a lot of his
But his biggest problem right now in winning the Republican primary is that
he stepped out of step.
Well, yeah, because he voted for cap and trade, right?
Right. And you're hearing that a lot downstate in particular. I don't know anything about him, but didn't he make the wrong choice on cap and trade? And so you're right. That is ironically picking up a lot of steam. And so now he's going around talking about his fiscal conservative values because he voted against the economic stimulus, but voted but on the, to but get on us the in the deficit
but on
in the
Democratic,
first place.
And by the way, in your professional role here as a member of the Democratic Senate campaign committee, your job basically is to work with whichever Democrat wins the primary. So at the moment, you're focusing on trashing the Republican. But let's take a look at that field. I'm realizing that you have to be objective here.
Sure.
Let's look at the field. You have Alexei Giannoulias, who is the state treasurer, who's running in the race. You have allegedly Sherrill Jackson, although she is not announced yet. She is the former press secretary, Rod Blagojevich, which I can't think of a worse credential to have in politics. Than
I think
to
she was actually deputy governor.
She was at that particular
Thanks
time.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, no problem.
But she was also she's the president of the Chicago Urban League. Mm-hmm. And then you have this newcomer, Mr. Hoffman, who is the inspector general for the city of Chicago. Squeaky clean, but basically came from nowhere and could be the surprise reformer in the race.
Very interesting candidates on our side. I think you're right. He is the new candidate in the race. I think he's got a great story. He's young. What we're going to have to see is if he can raise money in order to be taken seriously.
This is David Hoffman.
Right. Sherrill Jackson is the head of the Urban League, which is an incredibly powerful and influential organization. Just had a big national conference here in Chicago a couple weeks ago that was very successful. She has developed her own credentials in her own right as a leader of that organization and some other things that she's done in her past as well. And then Alexei Giannoulias, he's been in the race the longest. He is well-organized, a very good fundraiser. He's traveling throughout the state talking about a lot of the good things he's done as treasurer, but also the things that he wants to do as senator. So it'll be interesting to see how those candidates shake out.
How would you rate that field on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being absolutely horrendous and 1 being phenomenal? Where would you rate that as a competitor Republican, Ryan?
I think that field is about a 7. I don't think there's an A candidate in that race. I mean, the national folks have tried to recruit everybody and their neighbor to run because they know Alexei has huge problems. And I think this is where the Hoffman candidacy comes from maybe some folks in Washington, maybe some folks in the city. On the flip side, you know, the number one recruit in the country, Mark Kirk, is running, and he is going to be extraordinarily difficult to beat. There might be 35 people running in that primary, but this is Mark Kirk's race to not only win the primary, but, you know, and I've heard the same things downstate. I also hear that he was recently talking with voters and people are signing up yard signs. There's some momentum. I think Republicans in this state want to win, and they know that Mark Kirk's the best chance for that.
Tom Bevin.
It's going to be interesting. I'm assuming Alexei Gianoulis is the Democrat and Mark Kirk's the Republican. You know, how well are those guys going to perform downstate? And how well is you know, can Kirk perform in the suburbs? I mean, he has proven that he can win in a Democratic district, even in the toughest of years. Mm-hmm. So he has a profile that fits for sort of the North Shore and as you move into the western suburbs where Republicans have, you know, used to be strongholds but now have really sort of shifted. So it's going to be an interesting race. I think it's pretty close. I wouldn't say Kirk's a lock to win it, but I think it would be a very, very close race.
Doesn't Hoffman, if Hoffman should end up winning that primary, doesn't Hoffman give Kirk a much tougher race than the other two candidates?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know anything if about
he wins
him.
If he wins the primary, you know, which would be a surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, the credentials, the audience, the groups that he would have to appeal to, I mean, that would take, you know, a lot of the suburban Republican areas and maybe put them in play because, again, we're talking about this is the Inspector General of the City of Chicago who has been very critical of Mayor Daley, the man who appointed him, really uncovering just, you know, rampant corruption in the operation of the city. And he's been doing it and basically getting away with it. He's sort of the next best thing to the U.S. Attorney's Office insofar as rooting out corruption. That could play very well.
It could.
If he could get money and get that message on the air. 1-800-723-8289. We've got callers on the line. Back to them when we come on back from Chicago.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221 for your in-home 60-day risk-free trial. That's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
These are tough economic times, so I want you to think about something. Gold. At Goldline is the company you can trust for your gold needs. They've been in business since 1960, so call them today. 877-361-COIN. That's 877-361-COIN. They've been audited from a Big Four accounting firm. Their financials are solid. So call them today for a free investor's kit. 877-361-COIN. You get the free DVD and free shipping on your first order at 877-361-COIN. And remember, Goldline.com.
We are back on the air. Let's go to Flossmoor, Illinois, where Harrington is listening to us. Harrington, go ahead. Are you there? Harrington, are you in Flossmoor? Flossmoor, are you in Harrington? Are you there? Somebody's laughing. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Bruce. This is Mike.
Oh, yes, Mike. You're in Spokane.
Spokane, right.
KXLY. Go ahead.
Right, thanks, Bruce. Well, what I call the truth factor, you know, confusion reigns over health care bill, what it says or does not say. Unemployment now stands at 9.4. President Obama said it wouldn't go above 8.4. So people are leaving the ship.
They're leaving the ship, and you think it's are you predicting a Republican takeover in the House or in the Senate? They've got to pick up 40 seats in the House and 11 in the Senate. I don't know how they pick up 11 in the Senate.
They won't do that, Bruce. No way. But there is the doubt factor there. It's creeping in.
What about Patty Murray in Washington?
What do you think about Patty Murray up in Washington?
You know, I think she's strong. She'll probably get reelected.
So what
so
are you
not leaving the ship in Washington?
Well, there are doubts coming in, though. The doubt factor is there.
Well, you know, when I think of Spokane, I think about the history of this program. I think of a call, and I don't know it was you, Mike, because it was a long, long time ago. Because KXLY in Spokane, I think, is our second or third oldest affiliate, and next year we celebrate the 30th anniversary of this program. But I remember a caller who once called this program and said that Tom Foley, the Speaker of the House, was in trouble in Spokane, and we couldn't believe it. Until we went and we did the show from Spokane, and we realized he was in trouble, and he did lose. So
right. Yeah.
If you hear any more news, let us know. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. And again, if Harrington calls back, give us a call. We'll give you another shot. The other thing that's going on in Illinois, there is a Democratic primary and a Republican primary for governor as well. Pat Quinn, who was the lieutenant governor to Rod Blagojevich, who is the disgraced former governor of Illinois, now under federal indictment. He is now the governor. However, he has been challenged by Dan Hines, who is the state comptroller. And your assessment of that race, Kathleen?
Well, I think from what I've seen, I'm not involved. Dan is ready to run a real campaign and an aggressive campaign. I think he's probably eager to show that he's learned the lessons from what went wrong in the Senate primary.
He ran against Barack Obama and lost.
Correct.
And everyone thought when that race began that he was going to be the winner.
He was the front runner for quite
a long time.
Well, there are the lessons that go with running an effective campaign.
Don't run against Barack Obama.
Right.
Lesson number one. Okay.
There was a rule, guys.
I'm not doing that.
Don't have to worry about that.
Right. I think he made some mistakes as being the top-heavy front runner candidate, focusing too much on establishment endorsements. And I think, you know, anytime you run through a campaign, you're going to know what works for you and what doesn't, and how you balance staff and hiring and the kind of schedule that you keep and where you invest your resources. And that just comes with practice, you know. And I think that Dan is suited for the governor's office.
And the Republican, there's a large field of Republicans. Now, again, you are working for or advising one, Matt Murphy. Mm-hmm. So let me let me defer to our objective observer. Let me ask you a question about the Democrat, though. Is when you look at Patrick Quinn, who is his constituent? This is a maverick. His whole career, he has been a maverick. He's not been a popular figure within the Democratic Party, but he with the pros. He's always been popular with voters, but not necessarily with the pros. So if he's in a primary, which is you really separate, you know, the men from the boys in a primary, who is really with him? Who can Pat Quinn count on in a primary when he is running against the son of one of the most powerful ward committeemen, at least historically? He's no longer the committeeman. His father used to be the assessor of Cook County. I mean, he grew up in machine politics. So who can Pat Quinn count on?
That's a good question. I don't know. That's why I think Hines strikes me as a very formidable mm-hmm. challenger. And I think he's probably – look, I don't think any of this stuff happens by accident. You run polls, you test things, and he's not going into this blind without knowing that he has some solid support. So I don't know. It's tough to answer that question. I mean, look, I think Quinn's in a tough spot given how he came to the office and I think given some of the stuff that he's done, you know, that it's going to make it tough for him. I don't know, you know, where he's going to find the kind of support he's going to need to make it through. It's going to be it's certainly going to be debilitating for either of the two, I think. Mm-hmm.
It's going to put a lot of people on the spot, as primaries mm-hmm. generally do. Give us your assessment of the Republican field, and I will tell the audience if I think you've abused your position here.
I'll say
you're
this.
For Matt Murphy,
yeah.
Who's a state senator, one of three state senators who is vying to be the mm-hmm. Republican nominee for governor.
Well, I'll just say with the Democratic race, I think that's going to be a very tight race, and I think it's going to be pretty bloody. I mean, it already is. I think on the Republican side, there's some good candidates there. I'm not going to go into naming each one of them and their pros and cons, but I do think this is the best chance for Republicans to win the governor's mansion in a long, long time. And I think Republicans are starting to feel it, and they think that whether it's Quinn or Hines, that they're both very vulnerable. You know, both of them jumped on the Blagojevich bandwagon, right, and said, yeah, he deserves re-election. He's got $20 million when there were subpoenas. And, you know, I think that's going to come up a lot. But the field, I think, is an interesting field. But I think the party's got to decide kind of which direction it wants to head. Does it want to look forward or kind of backward?
Do you think there's another possibility that there will be other candidates either in the Republican or Democratic side for governor?
I don't think for the Democrat.
Mm-hmm. You think that field is set? well, then it seems to me that one of the keys here is going to be where the black vote goes. The black and Hispanic vote is going to determine that race, at least in the Democratic primary for governor of Illinois. We are out of time for our broadcast this week. Our thanks to Tom Bevan of RealClearPolitics.com. Kathleen Strand, nice to have you with us on your maiden voyage. Ryan McLaughlin, thank you very much for joining us as well. This program is a Genevieve production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio in Chicago. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart and Kate Shepard for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at the same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
I'm living paycheck to paycheck.
We're so far into debt.
All we do is fight about
it. We don't know what to do anymore.
How would you like to get a call finding out that your Visa bill had been reduced from $8,000 to $4,800? What about discovering you had an extra $500 to $1,200 in your budget per month because of what you are saving on your credit card bills? All of these dreams are possible when you make one five-minute call to Jordan McKenna. They will match you to a reputable law firm that can stop harassing collection calls, reduce your monthly payments, and save you literally thousands of dollars off your credit card debt. They work for you, not the credit card company, so you can get the maximum savings possible for your situation. Call for free information now. 800-204-6773. Individual results will vary, so please review all program details and terms. Call 800-204-6773. That's 800-204-6773. 800-204-6773.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221. For your in-home 60-day risk-free trial, that's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
Introducing the Ally Bank 12-month high-yield CD with such a great annual return of 2% APY. People think there's a catch. But no, no catch. No teaser rate, no limited time offer, no fine print, jargon, or legalese. No hidden tricks, traps, pitfalls, curveballs, or doublespeak. Just a 12-month high-yield CD with a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
These are tough economic times, so I want you to think about something. Gold. At Goldline is the company you can trust for your gold needs. They've been in business since 1960, so call them today. 877-361-COIN. That's 877-361-COIN. They've been audited from a Big Four accounting firm. Their financials are solid. So call them today for a free investor's kit. 877-361-COIN. You get the free DVD and free shipping on your first order at 877-361-COIN. And remember, Goldline.com.
And now, another reason to switch to Geico.
Every month, we get lots of letters telling us how much folks like Geico's claim service. And I quote, "The adjuster assigned to my claim was incredible. He walked me through everything." Then there's this one. Geico.com is very useful and lets you track your claims. And this. "I filed a claim at 4:15 on Thursday afternoon, and my car was in the shop at 10 a.m. on Friday." And my personal favorite, "Easy Squeezy Lemon Peasy."
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.